Hi, everybody. Welcome. It's time for Atomic Radio Hour, episode 306. That's right. I said episode 306. How are you doing today? You guys look fantastic. As usual, the light is directly in my eyes, and I must fix it shortly because I certainly will go blind by looking into the sun. How are you? Like I said, you look great. You look fantastic. Love what you're doing with the whole facial hair. If you've been hitting the gym, you look fantastic. Let me fix this light before I blind myself to death. In the eye. There we go. I can see the screen a tad more. The sun isn't directly in my glass balls, as they say in the Clockwork Orange. Hey, everybody. This is actually... Oh, shit. The light's falling. Okay. Let's try this one more time. What got it caught? I was really afraid. Oh, wow. That was actually really scary. Because, you know, this is a pretty high-powered light bulb. I was afraid that if something fell, if one thing fell, I was afraid that the bulb could smack my desk, and then if it smacks my desk, it could start a fire. You know, it's not. Good thing you pay renters. I got to pay my renters insurance when this is done. That's why you have things like that. Welcome to this week's program. What a way to start, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Thank God this has been a slow week. Thank God this has been a slow week. Last week was just Xbox shutting down multiple studios, all this other crazy stuff. At least we found out that over 80 million people have watched. There's been 80 million viewers of the Fallout program on Amazon Prime. Fantastic news. The more Fallout that gets to more people, the better. As far as I'm concerned, show this to your friends who like the show too. Be like, yo, you could get into the show a little bit. You can get into the games. Here's this guy who's been doing this for a while who just kind of yells on the internet. Bunch of fun stuff. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be here. So something I wanted to talk about real quickly, because I've talked about it in the past. Kyle, my brother, myself, we had a tag-along podcast, just something that we put together quick because we wanted to talk about it. The three of us, we got our first, this should be on screen behind me, our first shots of what The Last of Us Season 2 is going to look like. And it's the biggest problem I've seen with The Last of Us as a show now that we've seen Fallout on Prime, is that we are following Joel Miller and Ellie Williams, who are two characters who I enjoy, especially Ellie, I enjoy watching, but they're two characters that I already know their story. So no matter what Ellie looks like in the show, I'm not going to align with it in such a way that I would as if it was Ellie in the game. And I notice this even more now because the Fallout show goes, hey, here's brand new characters. Here's Mr. House. We'll give you House real, real quick. See him? He's right here. It's great. Little mustache. Fantastic. But it's not like I'm not seeing Boone. I'm not seeing Benny. Like if they cast Benny for whatever reason and it's anyone other than Matthew Perry, which is impossible for them to do now, is have anyone that's not Matthew, is to have Matthew Perry show up. Like it's not going to feel the same to me. And I feel like that's maybe how I feel about The Last of Us show. And it sucks that it's like a thing that is comparative, because even without the comparison, The Last of Us show is damn near perfect. That Bill and Frank episode is fantastic. Like, you know, I had my qualms. There was things that I thought were missing that the original show did a tad better, but that's everything. I have qualms about the Fallout show, but it sucks that I'm seeing it now. But maybe it doesn't suck. Who knows? Who knows? I don't. Do you? Because these are the questions that I'm asking. I think the show is fantastic. The Fallout show and The Last of Us are fantastic. It just sucks that now we're at a point where it's going to be compared to it. The Last of Us came out and was hit with huge acclaim. People loved it. It's what I call a mom show. Not because it's for moms, but it's something you can say to your mom, hey, go watch this. The same way that I got my mom to watch Fallout and she loved it. My mom watched me and my brother growing up play The Last of Us and then watched the show and was like, I kind of remember these things. And you know, maybe when we hear the story and see the story of Joel and Ellie, maybe we'll get to hear and see the story of someone else that exists in the Last of Us universe. Because that's what I think The Last of Us is missing. Fallout has been criticized for being just the East Coast, except for the one game of the Bethesda era. It's here's DC, here's Boston, here's Appalachia, West Virginia. Then all of a sudden, here's Vegas, here's New Vegas for just a brief time, and then bop out. And we're just not going to see anything else around that. I feel like that's kind of what The Last of Us is doing in a smaller scale because we only have the two games. But it would be nice to see what else has happened in this world, what other people are out there, what else is going on, if there's someone else who might be developing some sort of a cure or something. I want to know what you guys are thinking. Please, in the comments below, let me know what you think about now that both The Fallout show is out and The Last of Us has been out. Where do you kind of fall in that? So, in chat, if you like the show, check out the Patreon. Link in the description below. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Patreon in a moment, but if you're in a certain tier like Marcus is tonight, thank you for joining us tonight, Marcus. You get to become a part of the show. We have a chat that I'm reading live right now, and Marcus just says, and excuse me, I need to get a little closer to see. I was thinking about an app like TripAdvisor. It tells you what happened in the place that you're standing, but in the Fallout universe. And I love this idea because we have so much vague knowledge about what is out there in the world of Fallout. Obviously, we have DC, we have Boston, we have West Virginia, parts of California, parts of Washington, parts of Oregon, parts of Nevada. We have all that. But then we have very, very loose things that are alluded to. And I will always bring up how Denver, because I live an hour outside of Denver, is Dogtown. And I really, really like the idea that I could go there and be like, okay, cool, from what we have in the game, this is what's here. The assumption that we have some enclave in Michigan somewhere is another thing that I'd love to see. Where is it? North Michigan? Is it predominantly Canadian with a little touch of it? You know, something that would really, really delve into the lore that is the extended universe, really. Like, imagine being able to walk through Santa Monica and seeing this and being like, okay, this is where 33 would be, and then presumably 31 and 32 would be somewhere. And the Griffith Observatory is obviously where the Griffith Observatory is. And then, oh, look, that over there is the where the Super Duper Mart would have been from that great episode. Marcus even adds, obviously, some places would just be craters, but I think that would add to it. And it absolutely would add to it. I've been playing Fallout 4, much like I assume most of you have been playing. And there's a crater that's just in the middle of the city that it's irradiated, but it doesn't seem to be like glowing sea irradiated. And there's just ghouls, there's ferals there. And just to be able to walk through that part of Boston, if you're in real Boston, and be like, oh, look, my app is saying that I'm at that crater. Oh, this is where Green Tech's genetics would be. Oh, cool. This is the library. This is the Freedom Trail. This is the church. This is the Old North Church. Like, oh, okay, that's the airport. That's where the Brotherhood would have landed. Things like that are just super cool. And I think a lot of people would appreciate that, especially the people who live there. Because when I went to DC and walked around, last time I went to DC, it was 2 years ago for the Fallout 3 meetup where I met Wes Johnson. And because I got to show it off every video, he signed my copy of Fallout 3 that I got on my like 11th or 12th birthday. Ha ha. Take a shot. If you're using the bingo card, take a shot because I brought it up. I went to the Jefferson Memorial because I'd never been there. And I just kind of stood there and like looked around the whole time. But I walked into the Jefferson Memorial and was like, damn, this is where like Liam Neeson James dies, like right here. That's nuts. Just because it was fun. Marcus, again, I would love to visit and learn about the vaults. Same. Okay, this is just about where the vaults were. The only problem with the Bethesda era of Fallout games is they shrink maps because they need to fit them in games. Tunnel Snake's Fool has been doing a project where she's been retrofitting maps to Google Earth. And I don't know if she's finished with the project or not. I messaged her because I wanted to use them. But she said wait until she's done what she needs to do. And I don't know if she's finished because every time I see she keeps talking about other stuff that she needs to work on. Anyway, it's really fun to play with, but it seems like they shrink down DC and Boston and Appalachia, like down into these smaller versions of themselves, which makes sense because they only have so much RAM to play with. But I thought that was a really neat idea. And again, that comes from Marcus, who was just chilling in the chat and came up with a great idea, and we ran with it. Now, speaking of all this Fallout stuff, we got to get into this week's Fallout lore, and it's a big one. We're doing another big three like we did the past 3 weeks. We got to do another big three. Last 3 weeks, we did Maximus, Lucy, and the Ghoul. Those three pieces were on the last three episodes, and now we have another big three that are coming up. And if you would like to vote on which big three in the order we're going to do them, check out the Patreon. In the link in the description below is a link to the Patreon. There's the $1 tier to the $10 tier. And even at the $1 tier to the $10 tier, your voice is heard when I ask these questions. Right now, I have a poll in there talking about which of the big three would you like to see. One of them was picked. So next week, it'll be another one of those two. And then the third one, and then we do more polls. And I have a lot of fun letting you guys decide. And you can do that whether at the $10 tier or the $1 tier. The $10 tier, which I think is the best deal, is pretty much usually four times a month, because that's how many weeks are in a month usually, you get to watch these episodes get recorded live. And Marcus is here tonight, who is watching this episode get recorded live and threw in his own two cents of what he would like to see, and it became a segment on the show. On screen, before I dawdle any longer, the names on screen are people that I have to thank. These are all people that support the show, who believe in the show, who believe in me in some capacity, and I have to thank them. Starting at the top, I have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Marcus. Thank you, Marcus, who's here tonight. Welcome, sir. I also have to thank Mellow Milhouse. Thank you to Mellow Milhouse. After Mellow Milhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. And after Captain Lennox, I have to thank Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to Danish Hound Dog. Because of these fine folks, that these names that you're seeing on screen right now, the show can continue to get bigger and better and harder and faster and stronger. And I thank you for being a part of this crew. I thank you for the support. I love you. So this week's lore, like I said, I wanted to do another big three, as I'm calling it, another three protagonists. And what I really wanted to do was three characters who I feel like are really, really mainstays of the series. That if something happens to them, be they good, be they bad, I'm going to be upset if they're off the show. That being Hank McClane, overseer of Vault 33, Norman McClane, Lucy's younger brother, and Chet, who as of right now does not have a last name. But it is Lucy's cousin and her weird boyfriend of 10 years who they fooled around because they have rules against cousin stuff when it comes to breeding in Vault 33. So if you'd like to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever, consider checking out the Patreon, because from the $1 tier to the $10 tier, your voice is heard every single week when it comes time to choose this week's Fallout lore. And by way of the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon, I bring you the lore on the one, the only, Hank McClane, overseer of Vault 33. I would be lying to you if I said Hank isn't one of my favorite characters from the show. And when I was writing my notes, I also realized I think every character might be my favorite character in the show. I don't think there is a single character I disliked. I liked Bud. I liked Bud Askins quite a bit. And that dude is a piece of, like, I have no other way to put it. He thinks that what Vault-Tec is doing is right, and he believes that war is a good thing, especially when it's for the Vault-Tec, and knows about the problems that are with the T-60 power armor and doesn't do anything about it because it is not his department. I like him as a character because he's awful and he fits the world. Every character is very well written so far in the show. Now, Hank is played by Kyle McCallan, and I thought it was really funny that Fallout now has a second Daddy Kyle, a second Papa. And I think it's even funnier that Kyle, my Kyle, our Kyle, special guest Kyle, knew about Kyle McCallan because of Twin Peaks, because Kyle loves Twin Peaks. And I thought it was a cool connection that I was like, oh, Papa, Kyle, Twin Peaks, Fallout. Like, it's all these things that we love coming together. And we love Kyle with all of our hearts. Hank is one of my favorite types of archetypes when it comes to these types of shows. He's incredibly charismatic, and he genuinely makes you believe that he is on your side. I have written here, he gardens, watches movies, and is in a book club with his kids. Right there makes you think that he's a stand-up fella. That would make you think that he's a good guy. He cares about his family, he cares about his community. And then it turns out that he's responsible for glassing an entire community that's been thriving for pretty much over 100 years. Henry McClane being his full name. Henry McClane, Hank McClane, Overseer Hank, is a man who is over 119 years old. It's not known how old he is. We're not sure how old Hank is when we meet him because he was put in cryo sleep. So let's say he's about 30 plus 219. He's about 260, let's say, about around there. He was part of Bud's Buds. Now, Bud Askins, who I brought up a little while ago, being the junior senior vice president of Vault-Tec, is doing this program, this training program called Bud's Buds. And it's higher up ranking management members who are then taught how to teach. Because in Bud's words, the way that you beat your enemy is with time. And if we can wait out the war and we can wait until that they are completely gone, then they can re-inhabit. More or less, what's implied from the show is that Bud's Buds were to go into Vault 31, help repopulate through 32 and 33, and then go to the surface with this new level of management because they thought management was going to fix the world and that you could totally control people through management. Now, Hank's position was to work directly under Barb Howard, who is Cooper Howard's wife. She was a high-ranking official for Vault-Tec, and he was her executive assistant. And the ghoul alludes to, he says it that directly, that Hank used to pick up his wife's dry cleaning, and he was a big fan of Cooper Howard. He asked for autographs and to meet him multiple times throughout the show. I believe that there's at least one time where he talks to Cooper Howard on the phone, and then once, right before you find out about the vaults and you see Robert House, from the perspective of Vault-Tec, he meets Cooper Howard for the first time, shakes his hand. The CGI is quite off-putting to make Colin McCallum look very much like a younger man. And like I said before, sometime before the Great War, he is put into cryo sleep in Vault 31, so then he could become the overseer of Vault 33. If you haven't seen this, I want to point this out about Bud's Buds. If you haven't seen it, go back onto your Amazon, and there's a bunch of shorts that they've been coming out weekly on Twitter. I've seen them and on Instagram. They're fantastic. They're animated, and they're from the perspective of Bud Askins showing people what his job essentially is and what your job can be at Vault-Tec. They're fantastically put together. I don't think they came out before the show came out, and I kind of wish they would have, because it would have given so much more context to other people who aren't familiar with the Fallout world. Now, on August 9th of 2268, Hank is awoken from his cryo sleep, and in 2271, he is elected overseer of Vault 33. His major prime directive of Vault 33 and Vault 32 is to breed and be able to repopulate the surface, as well as not allow Vault's gene pool to stagnate. One of the opening lines is about how Lucy was in a sexual relationship with her cousin for a sexual reason, and how Chet, her cousin, is in love with her and can't get over the fact that he's in love with her. And she's like, hey, man, it's okay to have sex with your cousin. That's going to be clipped out of context. That's actually really funny. It's okay to have sex with your cousin. Just, you know, we can't breed. And he's like, I know, I'm sorry. But Hank was just okay with that the whole time. And because he's there to repopulate the surface, he would later go on to meet a woman by the name of Rose from Vault 33. Now, Rose was a dweller. She was born a dweller. She's always been in a vault. She never knew what the surface looked like. And together, her and Hank would go on to have two children, Lucy McClane and Norm McClane. At some point, Rose noticed that water was being siphoned away from the vault, and she questioned Hank on this, and Hank forbid her to ever speak on it. So she went to go out and explore the surface because she made the deduction that people must be out there restarting some sort of civilization. And if they're out doing that, we should be out there doing it as well. and she finds Shady Sands. Now, she doesn't find it the way Aradesh finds it, but she finds the settlement. She finds the civilization out there, and she says, this is where we need to be. She actually winds up taking she winds up taking Lucy and Norm out of 33 to Shady Sands. There's a scene in the show that they constantly flash back to, and it's Lucy with her mother in a field of crops of some sort. When they finally show you what that's actually about, they pan out, and you see that it's Lucy and her mother Rose in Shady Sands, and that Hank, pissed off that his wife left, and side note, this isn't true yet, but this is a theory, I think Hank got cucked. Just honestly, like, I'm not trying to be funny. I think he got cucked by Lee Moldaver. We're going to talk about her in a little bit. But I think he got cucked by her, and that's why he glassed it over. Because nothing hurts a man's feelings more than being told a woman doesn't want him. You could, like, shoot a man's dog in front of him, and he's going to be like, damn, that sucks. But a woman that he loves is going to be like, hey, man, it's not going to work out. That dude will go on a quest. A quest to fix that. And it'll be destructive, and nothing will be productive. And he'll get at the end of it and be like, what was it worth? Was it worth anything? No, this is all headcanon. I can't say that for certain. But the way Moldaver grabs Rose's ghoul hand at the end of that scene in episode 8 leads me to believe that maybe they were getting busy. Now, this next part I got off of Nukapedia, the fallout.fandom.com, the Nukapedia, if you will. And the point that I'm bringing up that seemed off to me was that Hank, it says that Hank tells Vault-Tec about what has happened because he's so furious, and then Vault-Tec nukes Shady Sands. I don't understand how Hank would get in touch with Vault-Tec, and that also implies that Vault-Tec is still around. I don't think the vault itself would have a nuclear silo built into it. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? But I'm just saying, I thought it was a little weird that it would have been them. But also, at the end of the show, you see Hank go to what seems to be New Vegas. I mean, obviously, it's the 38. So what happens with Hopeville, the Hopeville silos? Maybe the Hopeville silos have something to do with... That's where I'm kind of at, is that Hank went to Hopeville to glass over Shady. Who knows if that's true or not? Now, like I kind of said earlier, him nuking Shady Sands turns his wife into a ghoul, presumably. I mean, what else would have happened? She's a feral when you get to see her. But the kids were not there. So at least he had the common decency to bring the kids home. But Lucy believes that her mother died in the Great Famine of 2277 and has no idea that she or her mother have ever left the vault. In 2296, Hank trades supplies from his vault of 33 to vault 32 for a breeder for his daughter. That is a wild statement to say. Turns out the 32 was overtaken by raiders led by Lee Moldaver, who I was speaking about briefly just a moment ago. After the wedding ceremony for Lucy and her now husband, Monty, they go off to breed, and the raiders start attacking, killing many of the residents, and taking Hank out of the vault. So Lucy's like, I gotta go find my dad. And that's kind of the plot of the show for the first season, is where is Papa? Because every Fallout story since Fallout 3 has to be about finding a parental figure. Except for 76. I guess 76 is go find my Freudian mommy. After Lucy gets Viltzig's head with the artifact in it, she brings it to Moldaver at the Griffith Observatory. And then Moldaver starts to explain the evils of who Hank is. She starts to say that Hank may seem like he has all the right intentions. He might seem like he's a decent guy, but he glassed over a city because his wife said no. Because his wife asked questions. They really, really stuck to the 50s motif of women need to be quiet. Again, another thing that's going to be clipped out of context. Wild. And now we have... One of my favorite lines of dialogue from the show is when Moldaver is telling Lucy the truth about Hank, and Hank is speaking in between the lines. And it's so well done. Like, it's so fantastically done. It's so well done that, like, I know Colin McCallum has been an actor for a long time. He was in the original Twin Peaks. He's been in, like, Sex and the City and a bunch of other stuff, too. But it's someone who's only been an actor for such a long time and is such a good actor, could have pulled it off, that... Like, if I ever meet the man, I'm going to shake his hand and ask him if he had a damn fine cup of coffee that morning, just because I know that's like a Twin Peaks thing. But I'm going to bring up that, like, yo, that is a per— I love the way they enter— the talking is like in between each other, and he yells at Lucy and he's like, listen to me, I'm your father. Like, there is just a— oh, that scene's so good. Now, the reason why they took Hank out of the vault is because Hank knows how to activate the artifact that is in Wiltzig's neck. Turns out it's cold fusion that the Enclave, who Wiltzig was— he was an Enclave scientist— had developed. And it was leftover Vault-Tec stuff. And, you know, Vault-Tec and Enclave are kind of the same thing. The Enclave took over the idea for the vaults and what have you. So it was social experiments. You know, the notes are probably there. They probably didn't have to go far for any notes. But he has the activation code, which is 101097, which is the release day of the first Fallout game in 97. And he doesn't want to give it up. He doesn't want to give up the code. He doesn't want to give up the cold fusion, but Lucy kind of demands it out of him, and he just gives it away. And the cold fusion activates, and while all of this is going on, Moldaver realizes that the Brotherhood has gained significant advances. The Brotherhood has been attacking while this is happening because they know that the artifact is there and they've been advancing, and Moldaver has to run out of the room to go save her people that are there. In rushes Maximus shortly after Moldaver leaves, and Maximus lets him out of the cage and thinks, oh my god, Lucy, I'm here to save you. Your dad's out, we can go back to the vault, and now that we're at the vault, I can come live with you and I could live a nice, happy, simple life. And she's like, no, no, Maximus, no, my dad is the reason why Shady Sands is gone, why your home is gone, the reason why you hid in a milk vending machine and then a Brotherhood knight saved you and you joined the Brotherhood. We could have been friends growing up. She doesn't say this, this is all alluded. You know, she was in Shady. He was in Shady. They could have grew up together. They could have been homies, buddies, pals, friends, compatriots. And her father took that from her. Right before Maximus breaks into the room, you see a suit of T-60 walk in without a head and drop. And for a second, you think it might be Maximus. At least I did for a brief second. And then it's not. And while they're getting— Lucy and Maximus are getting reacquainted and seeing how everything is going, and Lucy's explaining to Maximus how evil of a man her dad is, he goes to stand up to her, and Hank just bashes him in the face while he's in power armor. So he took the dead guy out of the power armor, knocks him in the mouth, and Maximus is out cold. Lucy then pulls the gun on her father, and he's like, you're not gonna shoot me. And she doesn't, because the ghoul does, and grazes him right on the cheek. And the ghoul walks in, he's like, where is my f***ing family? And, well, he actually walks in and asks, he goes, hey, young Henry, would you like another autograph? And then goes, where is my family? And during this whole conversation they have, Hank winds up getting away, and he runs out of Los Angeles. And the next time we see him is him outside of New Vegas, miles away. But the camera pans, and that's it. That's the end of the series, is knowing that Hank McLean went to Vegas for some reason. My theory has something to do with Vault 21, but we'll get into that another day. The wiki doesn't provide any fun facts. It doesn't provide any behind-the-scenes stuff that I could have shared with you. So that's pretty much all I have for you on Hank McLean, overseer of Vault 33. A very compelling character. Character I really enjoy seeing. Really genuinely love to see Hank. I can't wait to see what his role is in season 2, and I can't wait to tell you all about it when season 2 gets here in probably 2 to 3 years. And I hope you enjoy that little lore segment, because that, my friends, is this week's lore. All right, everybody, I gotta keep it a buck, I gotta keep it a bean, I gotta keep it a stack. It's 5 elements of hip-hop, right? DJing, breakdancing, graffiti, emceeing, and the 5th is knowledge. The 5th, in my opinion, is the most important. Now, that doesn't mean just knowledge of hip-hop, but knowledge of oneself, knowledge of empathy, knowledge of the world around you, very much in the way punk rock or punk isn't just a form of music, it's also a lifestyle, so is hip-hop. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a hip-hop show. All right, that might be the whitest thing you've ever heard me say, but as a culture that hip hop is, as a medium, it's inspired me. And you know, like I said, that fifth element being knowledge is arguably the most important. You could be the world's greatest breakdancer, writer, rapper, DJ, whatever. You could be the greatest in the other four fields, but if you don't have knowledge, you don't have shit. We got to talk about hip hop for a minute. I'm late to this party to talk about this, but what a good year to be a hip hop fan that we like witnessed Drake getting murdered in front of us. I don't know about you, but I can't stand Drake or his music, really. And now we have somebody coming out and saying what we've all been thinking. Even Marcus says rap beats are funny because it's just two poets getting wordy with each other. Yeah, that's what's great about it. It's not, I'm the biggest, I'm the strongest, I could run faster and do all these other things. No, it's, I'm going to write this and I'm going to tell you how you're the bad person in this situation. Kendrick calls Drake a PDF file. I know it sucks that I can't say it, and I think it's dumb too. Censorship in any form is wrong, but if I say it, the video just won't be shown to anybody, right? So he's downloading PDF files at home. And it's something that we've always known about. Drake was like way too close with Millie Bobby Brown when she was like 12 or 13 years old. And that was enough for me to go, yeah, I'm all right. And I've never liked Drake's music, right? I was a Childish Gambino guy. He's just a better version of Drake, like a way better version of Drake. He's got more insightful things to say, even when he's talking about girls who broke his heart. Like Drake's just like, I got a fake accent. I pretend to love my mama. That's my entire character. What a wild time. Like, when that, what's it called? Not Like Us? When Not Like Us came out, the final song, because as far as I'm concerned, Drake, like, doesn't understand who he's going up against. He brings up Kendrick's song Mother I Sober about how Kendrick's mother was assaulted as a child and how she couldn't believe that Kendrick wasn't because she was like, oh, it happened to me, so it had to have happened to you. And Drake, like, doesn't understand the message of it. Also, Kendrick calls him a colonizer. And his response to that is like, how come you always rapping like you about to free the slaves? Like, I don't think you understand this one, buckaroo. Just a beautiful, beautiful time to be a hip-hop fan. Kendrick won. Whenever this gets sparked back up in a few weeks or years, Kendrick will win a second time. Drake didn't even write his verses. He didn't write his own disses. He had his friends write it for him. Drake should not be allowed around children. and from everything we've already liked some young. Let's hope it doesn't go to cell block one. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This has been Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast. I've been your host, Vince. The intro music is by the one and only Shane Ivers. It's called Feather Duster, where you can get all of his free music at silvermansounds.com/free music. And like I said, the song is called Feather Duster. Should be playing now. Hope you're enjoying it. Great little tune. In the description is a link to my Twitter, the show's Twitter, Kyle's Twitter, the Patreon. Check out the Patreon. You could be just like Marcus and hang out with us as we record these episodes live just about every Wednesday, just about 8:30 Mountain Standard Time. Good time to be alive. Great time to be alive. Thank you for being here. There's links in the description to the Discord. Check out the Discord. Check out the Redbubble. Check out a bunch of other stuff. I love you guys very, very much. Thank you for being here. Marcus just said it's a ton of fun. It is a ton of fun. I knew a fat kid in high school who was almost 400 pounds, and we called him Tons of Fun. I love you guys. He's doing well now. He's actually lost a tremendous amount of weight. I'll see you guys later. I love you. Bye, everyone.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
This has been a production made by your friends at Gulman Entertainment.